Today's shir is Masechta Bav Basra, Daf Mem Zayin. We will begin on Daf Mem Zayin, Amud Aleph, four lines from the top, Amar Rav Yochanan. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Yochanan, Umen Ein L'Chazaka. As we have been learning, an Umen doesn't have the ability to establish a Chazaka. However, a Ben Uman, his son, Yesh Loi Chazaka. Obviously, as the Rishonim point out, that even if we're saying that a Ben Uman has the ability to establish a Chazaka, that's only if he was on the field independently. Certainly, his Chazaka cannot be based on anything related to his father being on the field. Similarly, Oris Ein Lo Chazaka, an Oris doesn't have the ability to establish a Chazaka, but a Ben Oris, Yesh Lo Chazaka, the son of an Oris, does have the ability to establish a Chazaka. And actually, the Rishonim used this Gemara to dispute a point that we quoted from the Rashbam yesterday. As we learned in the previous Gemara, the Gemara explained that our Mishnah is referring, when the Mishnah speaks about Arisim, it's speaking about Arisei Batei Avos. As we explained, the Rashbam Pshat, a special type of Oris that had this field, and the way they divided the field was that they took all of the produce for a certain number of years, and then the real owners took all of the produce for a certain number of years. And Rashbam explained that this unique type of Oris, Bati Oris, is different than any other Oris. Any other Oris, like anyone else who's hired for a position, the Rashbam explained, could be let go. An Oris Bati Oris cannot be let go. The Arisus remains in his family. Say the Rishonim, if Al Gemara says that the son of the Oris can establish a Chazaka, obviously it's because he's not considered a full-fledged Oris. But if the Rashbam is correct that the Arisei Bati Oris remain in the family for all generations, then the son of an Oris should be the same as the Oris himself. It must be that even though they are Arisei Bati Oris, it doesn't mean that it has to remain in the family forever, and that's why the Ben Oris, as the Gemara will go on to explain, has the right to establish a Chazaka. However, continues Rabbi Yochanan saying, a Gazlon, a Ben Gazlon, a Gazlon and his son, Ein Lam Chazaka, don't have Chazakin. However, Ben Benoisha Gazlon, the grandson of a Gazlon, Yesh Le Chazaka, can establish a Chazaka. Ask the Gemara, Heichi Dami, exactly what was the situation Rabbi Yochanan was referring to? E Osu Betanos Davuan, if they're claiming that they're just continuing their father's being on the field, then even the Ben Oris and the Ben Uman should not be able to achieve a Chazaka. For as the Rishonim explain, two ways of explaining the Gemara. One is that even though throughout Shas we have a concept of Taninan Liyorish, that Bezdin, in its capacity of Psach Picha Li'ilim, tries to make a claim on behalf of a Yorish, that's only in a situation where the person who he yashins from has the ability to make a winning claim. But here, since the Oris and the Uman, who their son is basing his claim on, could not prevail, they shouldn't be able, and we shouldn't make a tain on their behalf. Another pshat that the Rishonim suggest is that in order for us to do taninon on behalf of a Yorish, it has to be a situation that the person from whom he yarshin, we know what owned this property, was on this property. But here, even if the father, the Oris or the Uman, was on the property, we know that that wouldn't really have much meaning as far as Chazaka is concerned. Uman ain't like Chazaka, Oris ain't like Chazaka. And their being on the property is an essential element in their being able to win a Din Torah. And here that essential element is missing, that's why they can't, we don't tie on their behalf, and they cannot win the Din Torah. If, on the other hand, If, on the other hand, they're not coming with a claim that they're continuing their father's possession of this property, so then afilo begin gazlan nami. Just because his father was a gazlan, does he not have the ability to establish a chazaka? And as the Mefarshim explain, even though his father is a gazlan, and even though, as we're going to learn in the Gemara, as we get deeper into our Shir, Ezer, Hashem Yisbarach, that there is a concern that people will not make a mecha, will not protest against a gazlan, that's only if the property, that's only when we're dealing with the gazlan himself, or we're dealing with property that the gazlan was the one that stole, and that's how it came into the possession of the gazlan or his son. But if here the Gemara is referring to a situation that the Ben Gazlan, the son of the Gazlan, who's not a Gazlan, has a property, why should he not be able to establish a chazaka? Answers the Gemara, we're referring to a situation where the Edom tell us that the people bought this item. The Oris, the Uman, bought this item. That's the Girsa of the Rashbam. Tosfos finds this girsa very difficult to understand, because if it's referring to a situation that there are edim, that the ma'arer, that the person who's now protesting admitted that he sold this property, so why should we differentiate between a ben oris and an oris himself, or a ben uman and uman himself? Edim have the ability even to establish that it should belong to the oris or to the Uman. And therefore, Tosfos explains that the Ben Uman and the Ben Oris can establish a chazaka when coupled with the fact that they were on this property for 3 years with nobody protesting. They say that this person who now is protesting admitted in front of them that the father legitimately bought the property. And then there would be enough for them to have a migui, and they could be believed. But according to Tosfos and other Rishonim, it doesn't have to be that there were Edim, because then even the Uman and Oris would have a chazaka. It's only that they're Maida themselves, and that's why they could have a chazaka based on a Uman. Loi Tzricha, says the Gemara, the Kamer Edim Fenenu Hoidoli. Hanach, by Uman and Oris, Ikleima Koshta Kamri, we could say that what they're saying is true. Hi, but in the case of a Ben Gazlan, Afagav the Oide, even if there was an admission that by the person who now is protesting that it was stolen from him, he admitted that he had sold it, Loi Mehemen. Even if he made such an admission, because what Rav Kahana said, Dar Rav Kahana, Ilav the Oidele, a person is always going to admit that the gazlan stole from him, because he's concerned that if he doesn't make this admission, have imam talei lechaver the shachver, this gazlan will hand him over to the authorities, since it's that type of a person. And that's why the ben gazlan is not nema. Omer Rava, however, comments Rava, pamim, there are times that even the grandson of a gazlan won't have a chazaka. When he claims that he inherited this not from his father, who wasn't a gazlan, rather he claims he inherited it from his grandfather, who was a gazlan. And as we learned in the previous Gemara, if somebody's claim to the property is based on being an extension of a gazlan, he can't keep it, and here he's the extension of his grandfather, who is the gazlan. This is the girsa that we have in our Gemara. And the Rashbam has a different girsa. The Rashbam's girsa is pamim shafilu ben gazlan yesh lechazaka. That even though we began this shiur that a ben gazlan doesn't have a chazaka, there can be a circumstance, our Gemara says, that the son of a gazlan will have a chazaka, where he claims that this field has been in the family, not starting by his father who is a gazlan, rather starting by his grandfather who wasn't a gazlan. Then he will be like anyone else, and he can establish a chazaka. And the Rashbam actually says that both pshatim that the Gemara says are actually, we could accept both pshatim, that both gersos that we've just explained. As the Gemara was speaking about a gazlon, heichi dami gazlon, who exactly is a gazlon? Amr Rabbi Yochanan, kigon shehuchsuk asod zo begazlonusa. Somebody who we know stole this field, and as the Rishayim explain, once we know that he stole this field, even if we know that he gave it back to the owner, he will never be able to establish a chazaka on this field, because we see that he has the ability to steal this field, and therefore on this field he'll never be able to establish a chazaka. Chizda Amar of Chizda says that who is considered a gazlan, kigoyin the base pliny, members of a certain family, shaharigin nefashos al hiskei mamon, that wouldn't be concerned to murder to do the exhala. And as the Mefarshim explained, the sma, the prisha, it's not to we are not to understand that this is some sort of a unique situation. Rather, they explain that it's typical that a gazlan is such an individual that's ready to murder to carry out his gzela, only if we specifically know that this person is not that type of a gazlan will we not consider him a gazlan. The Rishonim debate how to understand the two turutzim of the Gemara. Some Rishonim explain that Rabbi Yochanan and Rav Chisda are actually disagreeing in their definition of who is considered a gazlan, that he and his son cannot establish a chazakah. Others learn that there really is no machlokes. Rather, Rabbi Yochanan is giving one definition, and Rabbi Chisda is giving a different definition, and there's no machlokes. Ritva has a very interesting pshat. Ritva says that Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Chisda are actually not necessarily arguing. They're just giving different definitions of who is considered a gazlan. However, he explains there will be one nafkamina between Rav Yochanan and Rav Chisda. He explains as follows. According to Rav Yochanan, it's only on this field that he has a chazaka to be a gazlan, that he's considered a gazlan, and he doesn't have the ability to establish chazaka. But that doesn't prevent him from being able to establish a chazaka on other fields where he wasn't muchzik to be a gazlan. Whereas Rav Chisda's definition, where he's an individual, a base pliny, shahargin nefashos al hiskei mamon, such an individual cannot make a chazaka, cannot establish a chazaka on any field. Says the Gemara, Tana Rabban, the Braisa says, Umen, as we've been learning, ein lo chazaka, doesn't have the ability to establish a chazaka. Yorit memnasai, if he leaves that profession, that means, as we've been learning, a tailor can't have a chazaka on a suit, because we say he got the suit because he was asked to fix it. But if he's no longer a tailor, now he can establish a chazaka. Now, as a machlokes rishonim, how to understand this case of a umen not being able to establish a chazaka when he's no longer a umen. Some rishonim explain that's referring to any suit or any suit that he received after he gave up his profession of being a tailor, he could establish a chazaka. But let's say he had a suit from before he gave up this profession, and now he gave up the profession, and now he holds on to that suit for 3 years. That would be the subject of a machlokes rishonim. Some rishonim say that he can establish a chazaka as long as he's holding on to this suit for a decent amount of time after he gave up the profession, he can establish a chazaka. Other Rishonim, however, disagree, and they say that anything he got hold of before he gave up the profession, he can't establish a chazaka on. Oris, continues the Gemara, and like chazaka. An Oris can't establish a chazaka. Yard Marisosoi, if he gives up his arisis, yes, like chazaka, he can establish a chazaka. Says the Mashah, that even according to the Rishonim, that say by an umen, he doesn't actually, that he could establish a chazaka, not only on items that he receives after he gives up his umnus, but even on items that he held before he gave up his umnus, as long as he held it for a decent amount of time after he gave up that profession, that strictly says the Mashal regarding umnus. We can't, however, say that regarding arisus, says the Mashal, because regarding arisus, certainly any property, if he held on property from before he gave up the arisus, it's a proof that he didn't give up the arisus. A person who's not an arisus is not holding property. And there, everybody will agree what the Gemara means is that he gave up all of the properties when he stopped being an arisus, and now any property that he receives after that, he can establish a chazakah. The Shulchan Aruch says that even though we've learned that a goy cannot establish a chazakah, says the Shulchan Aruch, that if a goy became a ger and he held on to a property for 3 years, even though he already held on to that property prior to his gerus, he could establish a chazakah. And the Gra says that the source for this psak of the Shulchan Aruch is our Gemara, because our Gemara says that after you change your position, you could establish a chazakah. The Torah, in fact, says that, as we learned in the previous Gemara, a gazlan cannot establish a chazakah, but says the Torah that if we know that the gazlan did tshuva, even though we don't know for sure that he gave back this property or any property that he stole prior to being a gazlan, similarly, as we learned in this Gemara, once he gives up and we know he did tshuva, he can establish a chazakah. Continues the Braisa, ben shecholik, but if a son separates his financial affairs from his father, and as Rishonim explained, it makes no difference if it was at the son's incentive to break up the relationship, or was at the father's incentive, or ishish and isgarsha, or a wife that gets divorced from a husband, even though we learned in our Mishnah, we'll discuss in the Gemara later in our Perek, that a wife cannot establish a chazakah on the property of her husband. Here, Harein kishar kol adam, if she gets divorced, she can establish a chazakah. Says the Gemara, ben shama ben shecholik, we could understand the case where the son separates from his father, itzrich, that the Bryson needs to tell us that he could still establish a chazakah, because we would think that even though they have no financial relationship, still, sal kadata chamino, achuli achligabei, a father will be meichel to a son. A father won't protest his son's being on the property, and that's why a son perhaps cannot establish a chazakah. Kamashma on the loy. That's why the Braisa says that yes, if they have no financial relationship, the son can establish a chazakah. Of course, the Rishonim say that even if they break off their financial relationship and then it's re-established, then the din will revert and that the son will not be able to establish a chazakah. Ela ishish nizgarsha, asked the Gemara, in a case where a woman got divorced, obviously there's animosity between that husband and a wife. So pshita, that wife can establish a chazakah on the husband's property, answers the Gemara, loitzricha. The Bryce is referring to a situation of Mugureshas Veda Mugureshas. We have many times in Shas where a get was thrown from the husband to the wife. Suffolk Kar of Loi, Suffolk Kar of Law. We're not quite sure if it was closer to him or to her. That her status is that she's not really married, nor is she really divorced. The Rav Zeira taught us, Dar Rav Zeira Amr Rav Yimri Ba'aba Mishmul, Kamakum Shamar Chachamim, wherever Chazal say that she's in the category of Mugureshes, Veinu Mugureshes, the loch is the Baal Chayim Zanasa, her husband still has to support her, but certainly if the husband's supporting her, that doesn't change that this is a couple that's about to get divorced, and therefore she can establish a chazakah on the husband's property, because the husband certainly is not going to be meichel her, he'll protest if she's on that property. There's a fundamental machloikus rishonim, Rashbam and Tosfos, how to understand the situation the Gemara is referring to. Tosfos, Rashbam explains that even if the husband did not designate a specific piece of property from which to support her, still she cannot she can establish a chazaka, because the Gemara is saying that anything that she'll do that would show ownership, the husband will protest because of their poor relationship. Taisa disagrees. And Taisa says that the case that our Braisa, with the Gemara's explanation, is referring to, where the wife can establish a chazaka on the husband's property, is only when the husband designated a specific piece of property from which she will be supported. So that's the piece of property from which she's supported. From that piece of property, obviously she cannot establish a chazaka. And on any other piece of property that the husband owns and has not been designated for her support, she obviously will be able to establish a chazaka. That's Taisa's explanation. The Mefarshim also say, our Gemara is a raya that our Gemara does not follow the opinion of the Yerushalmi. Because there's an interesting Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says that if a couple gets divorced, but the husband did not yet pay the ksuba, says the Yerushalmi, the halach is that the husband has to continue supporting her. So say the Mefarshim, according to the Yerushalmi, Al-Gemara did not have to come up with a scenario that Mugureshis, Aina Mugureshis, that being the case where she's living, where she can establish a chazaka. We could have said an easier case where they're completely divorced and yet the husband didn't pay off the ksuba, and since he didn't pay off the ksuba, the halacha will be that he has to continue supporting her, but she can establish chazaka. The fact that the Gemara didn't say that sort of simpler teretz is a raya that our Gemara does not agree with that sack of the Yerushalmi. Amar Rav Nachman, says Rav Nachman, Amar Yehuna, Kula, all of these people, the Oris, the Uman, Shehevi Uraya, that are able to bring independent proof that they bought this property, the halacha will be rayos and raya. The raya will be considered a full-fledged raya. Umamidin saw the biyadon, and we will keep the field in their hands. And as Taisus points out, this part of what Rav Nachman teaches us is obvious. Of course, if they bring a good raya that they bought this property, just because they're an uman or a oris, should not prevent them from establishing ownership. The chiddush says, Taisus, is the next words, that even though some Gazlan heavy raya, and even though Gazlan brought proof, the halacha will be ein rayos and raya, we will not accept that proof. And as Taisus goes on to explain, not only we will not accept his raya, but we will not return money that he claimed he paid for buying this field. Others say that actually we would pay for that. Ask the Gemara, my kamashmon, what is Rav Huna teaching us that we haven't learned already? Tanina, didn't we learn a Mishnah Masechta Gittin? The Mishnah Masechta Gittin says, Lokh Masikrikin, if somebody stole a property from, bought a property from an extortionist, and then he buys it. And then he buys it from the real owner. We consider that transaction void. We see, because as we learned earlier, that the owner only gave up this property because he's scared of the extortionist, and therefore nobody can establish a chazaka here. So what is the Gemara teaching us that we haven't asked the Gemara, that we haven't already learned? Before we go further, there's a very interesting tshuva from the Masas Binyamin based on this Gemara. He says that the Gemara Masechta Gittin actually doesn't paskin the way our Gemara says. Our Gemara says that they establish that you can't establish a chazaka on property that you buy from a Sakrikin, even if you buy it if you also claim that you bought it from the real owner. The Gemara, however, in Masechta Gittin says, It's not that you can't establish a chazaka on that property. It's just that the first owner has right of first refusal. And he has a right to say that he should buy it first. But if he doesn't buy it, after 12 months are up, then the purchase that somebody bought it from the extortionist with the owner's approval will be a valid transaction. Says the Masas Binyamin, what would be the halacha if somebody sold his chametz to a goy? And then after Pesach, instead of the goy selling back the chametz to the original owner, the goy sells it to a different person. Will that be acceptable or not? Says the Masas Binyamin, just like we find in this case where somebody, when the field was extorted, the original owner has right of first refusal, so too when it comes to the chametz, if the goy chooses not to keep the chametz, the halacha will be that the chametz has to be sold back to the original owner and he has right of first refusal. Magen Avraham disagrees. He says that if we're going to go that way, we're questioning the entire, we're putting into question the entire validity of the Mechiras Chametz, and the guy theoretically has the right to sell the Chametz to anyone he wants, says the Gemara. So the question again is, what is Rav Huna teaching us that we didn't learn out of our Mishnah Masechta Gittin? Answers the Gemara, Lafukim the Rav. We're trying to show that we don't follow the opinion of Rav. Dama Rav, Loi Shonom. And the Amalei Lake Chazek Fikni, the Mishnah says that this halacha, that the sale, even though it seems that the owner agreed, is not considered a sale only if the owner only said verbally Lake Chazek Fikni. Av B'shtar, had this transaction be committed to a document, the halacha would be Kana. That's why Rav Huna wants to teach us that we follow the opinion of Shmuel, Damar, that even if it was committed to writing, even if it was committed to writing, there is no transaction, until it would be written with a Chrayis Nechasim, as the Rishonim explained. Because why did this owner, on top of agreeing to the sale, also commit this to a Chrayis Nechasim, add this clause? It must be because he really agrees to the sale. And Rav Huna is teaching us that even if a document is produced showing ownership, it won't really be a raya that it became the Gazlans. Rabbi B'Masai Mishmei de Rav Nachman, Karka Einoi, the robber doesn't keep the land, Avamos Yeshloi. He's entitled to keep the money that it seems to be indicated that he paid for the land. However, says Rabibi, when Adam could say that we saw the Gazlan count the money that was being paid for the field. Avru, Omru, if all the Adam says that the owner admitted that the Gazlan bought it, but we didn't actually see the transfer of money from the Gazlan to the owner, Loi. There we won't believe, just because the Adam say it, that indeed there was a real transaction. Because we are concerned that the reason the owner admitted that the Gazlan paid him, as we learned earlier in our shir, is because of what Rav Kahana taught us. Rav Kahana, the Omar, Ilav, the Oidelei, the owner is admitting that he was paid for the property, not because he was really paid, because he's concerned that if he's not going to make this admission, the Gazlan, Havimamtelei, the day, Ulachamri, the Shachvar, will hand them over to the authorities. Omar Rav Huna, says Rav Huna, Taluya Vizovin, if somebody is forced to make a sale, the halacha is vini zvini. The sale is considered a valid sale, and the Rishonim say it makes no difference what type of forcing, any situation where it was done under duress, Rav Huna's teaching is considered a valid sale. My Tama, because Rav Huna suggests, call the mazman inish, any time a person sells something, ilav the honest, if not that he was forced, people would not naturally sell something they own. They only sell it because they're forced to sell it. Elab the honest, if not the fact that they were forced, lo have a masbin. they would never sell. Filachi zvini zvini. So here too, every sale, suggests Rav Huna, is considered under duress. And just like certainly all sales are valid, we can't stop the entire concept of business. Similarly, sale under duress should be considered a valid sale. Ask the Gemara, how can we compare a sale that a person is doing, even though he's forced to sell it, but he's doing it wholeheartedly from a sale that he's forced to do? Dilma shining unto the nafshim unto the achrina, as the Rimi Gash explains. Maybe in a situation where a person, even though he's selling because he's forced to sell, is selling it, there's gemira stas. As we've always learned, the main concept of creating a kinyan is gemira stas, to show that there's a willingness to sell. But here, there is no gemira stas, and therefore, it cannot be considered a valid sale. Close Magrebbe uses this Gemara to prove a halacha. We know that the halacha discusses that if somebody missed a tefillah, but he missed a tefillah ba'aynis, then he can make it up the next tefillah. That means if somebody missed shachris ba'aynis, he should daven mincha twice. And the question that the Mishnah Brura and all the Paiskim discuss is, what is the definition of an aynis? Is an oinus though something? Is an oinus moment considered oinus? And says the Klaus Magrebbe, if an al Gemara, the Gemara is calling an oinus moment an oinus, we see that any type of oinus is considered oinus, and therefore even if somebody missed a tefillah, not chas v'shalom that he should do that, but he missed a tefillah because he got caught up in a business deal, he's considered oinus, and he has the halacha that he can make up by the next tefillah. The Rashbam makes a point. He says that the Rav Huna that says Teluyu v'zovin zvina zvina is only regarding a sale, because since the person is getting paid, that's why we consider the sale a valid sale. But if somebody is forced to give a gift and he's not given anything in return, that certainly is not, even Rav Huna will agree, is not considered a valid gift. The shaila that the Rishonim discuss is, what happens if somebody was forced to sell something, but he sold it for less than its real price? Will that be considered a teluyu v'zovin, or will not, or will it be considered like a gift because he didn't get the real price that it's worth? So the Rishonim say that if he sold a metaplin for less than its value, it's not considered a sale, even according to Rav Huna. The question, the Rishonim debate, is what will be the halacha regarding karka? Because as we learned many times, karka ain't loy and no. We don't really assume that karka, the real estate, has a fixed price. So if karka is not considered an item that has a fixed price, so any price that I receive may be considered the real price. And if Rav Huna says, Teluyu v'zovin, zvina zvina, any money that I got for the karka, even if it's less than the real than the current market value, it should be considered a sale. Other Rishonim disagree. And they say that even though we're saying that, even though we're saying that karka is not considered an item that has a real price, certainly, that is only as far as Hilchos Aynah are concerned. But it has market value, and it won't be different than Metaplin, that if somebody was forced to sell it, that and didn't get the market value, even Rav Huna will agree that the sale is not considered a valid transaction. This distinction between Matana and Mecher, I saw the Mefarshim use to explain a number of situations that happened in our history. We all remember the parsha where Avraham Avinu comes to buy the Meres Machpelah, and Ephraim wants to give it to Avraham for a gift, and Avraham refuses, and he says, "Bekesef Mole," he paid full value. Why? So I saw the Mefarshim explain, because Ephraim wanted to give it as a gift, so that he could later say that Avraham Avinu forced him to give it as a gift. And as we just finished saying, everybody agrees that a forced gift is not considered a valid gift. That's why Avraham Avinu was smart, and he specified that he wants to pay for it. And now Ephraim will not be able to claim that he was forced, because even if he was forced, we're learning that to Luy Vizovin Zvina Ziva. And we look in the Rashbam and Chumash, it says, Vayishma Avraham, and the Pasuk El Ephraim, Vayishkoil. What's shot in the words Vayishma? So the Rashbam in the Chumash says, Dai Lechakima Bramiza. Avraham Avinu was a Chacham, and he understood Ephraim's intent. And because he understood Ephraim's intent, he was smart enough to say, to pay and not take it as a gift that Ephraim could retract. Similarly, the Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin, Daf Tzadik Aleph, Amar Aleph, quote, says that the Mitzrim brought the Jews for a din in front of Alexander Magnum, because they claimed that the Jews took all the silver and the gold when they left Mitzrayim. The Jews said back that they worked in Mitzrayim for 210 years and they never got paid. So first you pay us. So he says, that's pshat. The Mitzrayim wanted to claim that they were forced to give a gift to Klal Yisrael. And if they were forced to give a gift to Klal Yisrael, the gift should not be considered a valid gift. So they answered that there wasn't only a gift here. They also worked for the Mitzrim, and they deserve pay. Pay is like a sale, where I give you my labor, and you have to pay me for it. And that's why the Mitzrim lost that din Torah. Menachem and Mefarshim discuss, there's a famous Gemara. The Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos, that Mikan Maidor Rabba Loi Raisa, that Klal Yisrael have a valid claim that they were forced into accepting the Torah, as the Gemara says in Masechta Shabbos, Kof Aleihem Har Kegiges, that they were forced to accept the Torah, and that's why they have a legitimate claim if they don't follow the Torah, because it was done under duress. Ask the Mefarshim that our Gemara is saying, Teluya Vizovit, even if you're forced into a sale, Zvina Zavin, the sale is considered a valid sale. So what kind of claim, Mikan Midor Rabba Loraisa, what kind of claim does Klal Yisrael have to say that they didn't have to follow the Torah because it was done under duress? So some Mefarshim explain that even if Rav Huna is paskening that Teluyev Zavin, Zvina Zavin, is only if you receive the money. That means I'm forced to sell something, and I get compensated, even though I didn't really want to enter into the transaction. The law is that sale is a sale. But if I'm forced into a sale and I don't get anything, then even Rav Huna will agree that we don't say Teluyev Zavin Zvina Zavin. We know Hayoyim La'Soysom U'Mocho L'Kabel Scharom Schar Mitzvah B'Hai Al Maleka. We don't get schar in this world. So since we don't get schar in this world, so we didn't get paid. If we didn't get paid, even Rav Huna will agree that we don't say Teluyev V'Zovin Zvina Zovin. Another teretz that I saw from the Aperion, from a sefer written by the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, he says a very nice teretz. He says, why indeed is the halacha the Teluyev V'Zovin Zvina Zovin? Because the person who's buying the item and paying can always say, once I saw you take the money, I could always have assumed that you really in your heart were prepared to take it. Maybe at the beginning you protested, but once you took it, you really were satisfied in taking it. Says their period. That we could say when two people are doing transactions. So the person who's forcing me to sell an item to him could say, that's what I thought was going on in your heart. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what's going on in our hearts. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that Klal Yisrael really didn't want to accept the Torah. And that they only accepted the Torah because they were forced. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't say, I thought that you didn't want it. And that's why it's not considered a valid gift. On the other valid, that's why my Kamador Rabbel Raisa. On the other hand, some Farshim ask that even though we've been quoting the Rashbam, that Loka, that a gift that's given under duress is not considered a valid gift, but if it's given under the threat of getting killed, it is considered a valid gift. So now we have a question. Klal Yisrael, if they weren't going to accept the Torah, Kafaleim Hakigigas would have gotten killed. And that's why they accepted it. So the Mefarshim again used the same terrors that we said before. It's not that they would have been punished immediately. If they wouldn't have been punished immediately, even by a gift, the halach is, it's not considered a valid gift. And that's why the Gemara says, Masechta Shabbos, Mekan Mador Rabo Loi Raisa.